1320 WILS.
And we're back. Michael Cohen, producer James Platy on the board. It is Friday night, 6:46. More than 80 Great Lakes environmental and academic leaders meeting this week at the White House for the Great Lakes Summit to discuss future plans for these massive bodies of fresh water. One of those participating was Dr. Newt Nadelhofer, director of the University of Michigan Biological Station and professor of ecology and evolutionary biology. The professor joins me now to tell me what went down at the gathering. Thanks for taking some time to talk to us.
Well, thank you for inviting me on the program, Michael. The program, the summit or the briefing yesterday, I should say Wednesday, was a really important one. The Great Lakes are the largest freshwater body in the world. It's 20% of the world's surface freshwater. And our region, our state's economy, and our health and the quality of life of all of us depends on the Great Lakes. In terms of jobs alone, the Great Lakes provide us with 1.5 million jobs in manufacturing, tourism, agriculture, fishing. So it's an important thing.
Tell me, what was the consensus then of the meeting? Are the Great Lakes doing better than ever or not really?
Well, the answer to that is sort of mildly complex, but we've had some successes. The Great Lakes, you may remember in the 1960s and early 70s, for example, Lake Erie was declared a dead lake because there were so many nutrients and pollutants going into the lake that algae was out of control, growing and decomposing and sucking up all the oxygen, so we had what we called a dead lake. Well, in 1977, the Clean Water Act solved a lot of the problems, dramatically reduced pollutant inputs into the lake, and by 10 or so years ago, or even earlier, Lake Erie had recovered to a state that was much cleaner. Mm-hmm. So we've had those kinds of, and we had massive invasions in the 60s of alewives from the ocean that moved up the St. Lawrence Seaway, and they used to accumulate dead on our beaches. Well, we seem to have solved that problem by introducing salmon, which we now fish for and benefits our economy in many ways.
I see. We're doing better. Probably could do even better. But I do want to ask you about an issue that must have been addressed. It's the one that we keep hearing about, which is the Asian carp. Some say they're practically unstoppable. Do you think it's just a matter of time before they do end up in the Great Lakes?
Well, I think, the reason that we were gathered at the briefing was that we're all problem solvers, and we'd like to believe we can solve problems. So the Asian carp are knocking on the door of the Great Lakes, but as you know, there's been a great effort to keep them out. I could actually point to one apparent success of the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, which was the topic of this briefing. With funding from this federal project, the state of Indiana and the federal agencies were able to complete a barrier on the Wabash River that would keep Asian carp out of the Maumee River, which drains into Lake Erie, which could be an entryway for Asian carp. Now, we wouldn't have known that if it weren't for solid scientific research showing that connection was possible, but we appear to have erected a barrier thus far to keep them out. Whether we can do it in perpetuity, we don't know.
I see. But it's, you're saying essentially it's not clear yet. I'm talking to Dr. Newt Nadelhofer. He's the director of the University of Michigan Biological Station, and he took part in the White House Great Lakes Summit that occurred this week. When it comes to Asian carp, does it really just take a handful of them making their way to the Great Lakes before they start taking over?
Well, if we just had a handful, they might not take over. They might not even succeed. Oftentimes, what's required is a critical minimum population. In other words, enough carp to actually find one another and breed successfully and not get eaten by the other predators. So, of course, we don't want to do that experiment and see how many carp it takes to actually successfully invade, but we want to keep them out. I'd like to steer us, if I may, to some of the broader goals of this meeting, because, we're talking about a substantial investment in the Great Lakes, as you know, and this Great Lakes Restoration Initiative is really meant to restore our lakes to a condition that our great-grandparents or even their ancestors might have experienced. And And it's aimed at doing this by cleaning up toxins. For example, mercury, which is accumulating in fish and which people are eating and is causing health problems. Combating invasive species, such as the Asian carp, which you mentioned, but also zebra mussels, which are essentially eating all the good plants and algae in the lakes and leaving the more toxic ones to accumulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, the initiative, as you said, it's $785 million so far. How is that money, or most of it at least, being used specifically to do just that?
Well, it's boots on the ground projects. It's projects that are aimed at helping farmers to develop management plans that put the right amount of fertilizer on the fields and makes is enough to grow crops while at the same time not being so much as that it such that it leaks into our streams and rivers, moves into the lakes and causes these algal blooms that create huge algal masses that decompose and consume all the oxygen, such as starting to happen again in Lake Erie. So they're real boots on the ground projects. I would say, for example, as director of the biological station in northern Michigan, I'm aware of a project that's a cooperative project funded by this overall Great Lakes Initiative, providing the Little Traverse Bay Band of Odawa Indians and the tip of the Mitt Watershed Council with resources to restore river channels, control erosion, create stormwater treatment ponds, all to protect habitats and the quality of the lakes that those rivers drain into.
The initiative was established in 2010. I mean, is there any clear indication that we're getting results?
Well, as it was established in 2010, and we just started 2011, we have few examples of results. I pointed to the Asian carp barrier in the Wabash River. That's something we can point to. These projects that are starting up to restore wetlands habitats, restore stream banks, keep nutrients and fertilizer out of rivers and eventually in the lakes, these are all things that we really need to measure. I'm confident that they're making a difference because we know what the stressors and what the potential negative impacts of these sorts of things are. But what we really need and what the Great Lakes Initiative is doing is establishing tracking, in other words, scientific measurements and monitoring to track the progress and actually measure the outcomes. That's critical. And, you know, within a few years, we should know very well what the impacts and the improvements are.
So there are problems, I know, of sewage overflow from communities, toxins going into the water, Asian carp. When you look at all these different issues that may harm the Great Lakes, if you look at the next 5-10 years, which of them do you see as the most critical one that may do the most damage?
Well, that is a really good question. And one of the things we know about these things is that they actually interact. So, for example, the nutrients, the fertilizers that are going into the lakes because storm systems can't handle and process the fertilizer or because rivers haven't yet been restored to keep the fertilizer out, that interacts with the invasive zebra mussels that are in the lake. So the zebra mussels, and I think many of your listeners have heard about them, come into the Great Lakes 10 or 15 years ago, they love algae. They filter a lot of water. They actually make the lakes cleaner. But they selectively eat the nutritious algae, and they spit out the toxic algae. So as a result of the fertilizer going into the lake, interacting with the invasive species, we have toxic algal blooms that develop. Good algae going away, getting eaten by the algae's being fertilized, but the good stuff's being eaten by the invasive mussels, and the toxic algae accumulates, and the result of that is, you know, mats of decomposing Microcystis algae. This is a toxic blue-green algae. Wash up on the lake. They make the lake less usable for swimmers, but they also release a toxin into the water that's hazardous to human health. You can't swim when there's a microtoxin outbreak.
So. Well, the truth is the water is usually too cold to swim in anyway.
Well, I work in the Arctic, and I actually like that cold water. But
it probably feels like a bathtub compared to what you're used to up there. Well, Dr. Newt Nadelhofer, director of the University of Michigan Biological Station, professor of ecology and evolutionary biology, talking about the White House Great Lakes Summit, which occurred this week. Dr. Nadelhofer, thank you very much for coming on the program and telling us about it.
Well, thank you, Michael, and I'd be happy to come back at any time.
Absolutely.